For those of you who are visiting with us or who haven't been to a Christmas service, the last few years it's become kind of a tradition for me to tell the Christmas story from the perspective of a different character in the story. And so we have done Mary and Joseph and an angel and a shepherd. So really all that's left is a wise man. So this is the Magi's tale. It was Melchior who first noticed the star. He was staring up at the night sky, tracing the constellations with an outstretched finger, and then tracing them again on the chart lying on the table before him. Melchior was a young man, not yet 25, and there was much to study and learn as he took up his place in the palace court. He studied night after night, learning to read the ancient texts, learning to read the sky and the weather and the currents of the wind, learning as generations of seers and wise men had learned before him. He at least had had the constellations memorized since he was a child, and he took great delight in naming them. There was Cassiopeia, the queen. There was Perseus, the hero. There were the two bears, and further over, the great scorpion. Melchior nodded as he plotted the locations of the stars, noting the particular brightness of Jupiter tonight. And then he paused. He hadn't noticed it at first, concentrating as he was on the constellations. But there, just above the horizon, was a star that wasn't listed on his chart. He looked between chart and star a few times, but no, the star had definitely not been there when he had gone over this chart a few nights before. Melchior opened his bag and pulled out a roll of parchment, spreading them out on the table, flipping between them, checking. It wasn't on any of his star charts from the past year. This was something new. The next night, the star was still there, just slightly higher above the horizon line. And it was there the next night, and the night after that. On the fifth night, Melchior sent a message to a few of his colleagues, other scholars and advisors of the royal court who called themselves Magi, telling them to look between Perseus and Cassiopeia for a new star. What star is this? He wrote. What does it mean? Well, the next morning saw a great deal of commotion at the house of Melchior. Men from every corner of the eastern world with pointed beards and richly colored robes, arms full of scrolls and parchments, came in and out of the rooms, talking rapidly to one another, holding up diagrams, pointing to ancient texts, speaking in the languages not only of the Persian Empire, but of the West, of the Roman Empire as well. Scribes and servants were sent hurrying back to homes to collect forgotten papers, which were read aloud when back in the hands of the learned men, each hypothesizing with excitement about what exactly this new star in the sky foretold. By mid-afternoon, most of the scholars had reached a consensus. There was one prophecy, one writing dug up and presented to them by the scholar Balthazar. It was a Jewish prophecy, passed down for generations, said to be of the old oracle Balaam. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star will come forth from Jacob, and a scepter will arise from Israel. He will crush the skulls of Moab and strike down all the sons of Sheth. This new star, said Balthazar, this must surely be the star out of that land. This must be the star of the new king, the one who will rule the nations. An old scholar, a very long beard and dark, weathered skin, wrapped in a cloak of deepest purple, stood slowly. If there is a new king, he said, voice measured but cracking. We must go and see him. We must pay tribute. We must honor the one who is heralded by the stars. And so it was decided. Three of them would travel for months to the land of Judah, to Jerusalem, its capital, to find this new king. Melchior, having found the star, would be one of the three. Balthazar, familiar with the old Hebrew writings, would be another. And finally, Caspar, an older scholar who had made other trips like this in the past, would add his experience to the trio. It was a long journey. They were accompanied, of course, by their servants and households and camels laden with food and tents and other provisions. Nevertheless, Melchior was quite glad when, after many months of travel, they spied city walls rising out of a hillside in the distance, and perched at the very top, the gleaming white walls of a temple. They had reached Jerusalem. They had decided weeks before that because of his experience with such trips, Caspar would be the one to make their inquiries. The guards at the city gates were clearly confused when Caspar asked them where he might find the new king of the Jews. "King of the Jews?" one said, eyebrows furrowed. "I don't know so much about new, but Herod's palace is up that way." He pointed to the northwest. "I expect that's who you're looking for." The three magi looked at each other. Melchior knew they were wondering the same thing. Could it be Herod? Herod had been on the throne for years already. Was the star suggesting that a new era of his reign was beginning? Or was there someone else, a son, perhaps, that the prophecy was talking about? Balthazar shrugged his shoulders. "At the very least," he said, "having come all this way, we should pay our respects." Melchior could see a look of concern on Caspar's face. Herod, he knew, was a proud and ruthless man. They would have to go carefully now. In the palace, they were taken to a tower in which were rooms hung with brightly colored tapestries and tall statues and vessels inlaid with gold and silver. They remained in these rooms for 3 days, wandering about the gardens and canals that ran through the palace grounds, conversing with other guests at the palace, always looking up at night to see that the star was still there. Finally, on the third day, an attendant approached them as they sat in one of the gardens. "You will join the king for a feast tonight," he said. It was, Melchior noted, a command, not an invitation. King Herod was a man who would have been impressive in his prime. Melchior thought he must once have been quite tall, but his head had receded somewhat into his shoulders with age. His long hair, beard, and eyebrows were white and full, and his nose straight and prominent, over which stared piercing, calculating eyes. The conversation he engaged them in over their food was, thought Melchior, just casual enough to be unnoteworthy. But there was shrewdness behind Herod's questions. "You have come a long way," he said to them, popping a fig in his mouth. "We have, my lord," said Caspar. "We have come to pay homage." "It's an unusual time for such a thing," replied Herod, not looking at them, but focused, apparently, on the fruit in front of him. "I have had no birthday recently, no great occasion, no recent victory." Caspar swallowed. "We have come," he said, "because we saw a star, a new star, appear in the sky. We believe this star heralds the arrival of of a king, the one foretold by the prophets. We have come to pay homage to that king. The three scholars held their breath. Herod held another fig, rolling it between index finger and thumb. "Well," he said at last, "well, I shall of course help you to find this new king. I will inquire among my advisors. They will know where you must go." And so it was that 2 days later, Herod summoned the men back to him and said, "My advisors have read to me the prophecy of which you spoke. There are other prophecies, they say, from Micah and Isaiah, and they agree that this new king would be born in Bethlehem. That is where you will find him. And if you do, I beg you to return to me and tell me so that I, too, may go and honor him." He said all of this with a smile that didn't quite reach his eyes. Melchior exhaled loudly when they finally stepped out of the palace and rolled his shoulders back and down, shaking off the anxiety he had been holding since entering the palace. He knew, without looking at the others, that they would not be returning. Bethlehem was but a day's journey from Jerusalem. They reached the small city, tucked into a hillside as evening was falling. They climbed off their camels just outside one of the gates in the wall around the city. They could see through the gate that the roads were narrow and winding, houses built up, stacked one on top of another. "Where now?" asked Melchior. "How will we find him?" But he knew almost instinctively the answer to his own question. They all did. They looked up. And there was the star, brighter than ever before, closer to them than ever before. Leaving their camels and servants, the three men began walking down the streets, looking up at each new turn, getting closer and closer, their feet quick and light, until finally the star stood directly above them. Melchior looked at the place they had come to. It couldn't have been further from Herod's palace. In front of them was a door hanging in a whitewashed wall that covered a large facade of neighboring homes. Stone steps led up to another door above this one. Was it just this one floor? Melchior wondered. Just this one room? Again, the three scholars looked at each other. Again, Balthazar shrugged, and then he knocked. Immediately, they heard the excited noises of a child, followed by the shhing of a woman's voice. Footsteps approached the door, which swung inward to reveal a young woman, with long brown hair pulled back under a simple headscarf. She looked astonished at the sight of the three men, all dressed in their finest clothes, standing in the doorway, looking equally surprised. "Yes?" the young woman asked. "We have come," said Caspar, not even bothering to try and hide the doubt in his voice, "to honor the King of the Jews, whose star we have been following from the east." To their great surprise, the woman smiled. "Oh," she said, "well, you'd better come in then." And she opened the door wide and stood back to let them in. It was indeed one room. A small fire was lit in the corner, a mat filled with straw opposite it. On the mat, his small fists curled around two wooden stirring spoons, sat a child, barely a year old. The woman sat down next to the child. "This," she said, "is Jesus, Son of the Most High, ruler of the throne of David. She laughed at their incredulous faces. Don't worry, she said. I don't quite understand it myself. Melchior stared at the baby, who turned and stared right back at him. Melchior was dumbfounded. They had traveled all this way for this? And then the child smiled at him. And in his eye, Melchior blinked. But no, it was still there. In the child's eye was a gleam, a twinkle, a star. The star. The one Melchior had seen so many months ago that had crept over the horizon, propelling him on this journey, changing everything. Melchior sank to his knees in front of the mattress, not caring that his fine robes were now lying in dirt. Still staring into the starry eyes of the child, he pulled from inside his cloak a small bottle. "Myrrh," he whispered. The child smiled again and then banged his spoon on the floor, gurgling and laughing with delight. Beside him, Caspar and Balthazar knelt too, pulling from their own cloaks boxes of frankincense and gold. The woman's eyes grew wide. The baby just kept banging his spoon. Melchior grinned broadly. This, he thought, this will be a story. "Will you stay for dinner?" the woman asked, rising. "We don't have much, just some bread and fish and a bit of wine. But it will be enough." The men nodded, rising as well. "We would be honored to," Caspar said. And Melchior, looking again at the baby, could have sworn that he saw the star-filled eye give him a wink.